Hello again, Mark O'Donnell here with Operations Excellence. Welcome to episode 7 of our podcast. And today our first guest is my good friend, Mr. Zach Primo. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm really glad you're here. You are, and I'm not kidding, and I'm not being sarcastic at all when I say this. One of my favorite people. You know, you and I have gotten to know each other through a few different organizations and some other things. I love your energy. I love it. And we were talking before we started recording this morning. I think in some ways you're a young version of my brain because you're kind of always thinking and always looking at ways to try something different. And I love that.
You know, it's a blessing and a curse, right?
Yeah. As we discussed, if we could get the committee down to one or two voices right on any given day,
it'd be unstoppable.
That's right. That's right. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your business. I know your current business is Ads on the Go. Saw the truck outside, and we got some nice pictures before we started in today. Tell me about your current business, how you got there, a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I've been in the digital mobile billboard industry for the last 3 or 4 years, and it really started with me just being completely enamored by the concept and the truck itself. and through networking and through hard work and sales and a lot of other different things, I was able to get to the point where I was managing and owning the company before. And, you know, the main purpose of why we do what we do is, you know, we live in the most distracted and over-entertained society in the whole world. Mm. And as a small business, it is very, very difficult to get the attention of the consumer in a way that hasn't been done or in a way that's actually going to reach them. You know, because the average person sees 10,000 plus ads a day. Mm. And it is very, very hard to stand out in that noise, especially without having a big corporate budget.
Right.
Only having a few hundred or a couple thousand to spend on advertising or, a lot of none at all. It's absolutely. So we really try to be unique and offer these small businesses an opportunity to break through the noise and get in front of their audience, whether it's our subscription route that's just driving, hitting consistent traffic Monday through Friday, whether it's at these huge events that we've been going to and really, it allows us to really hit a target market like the Syracuse Nationals, like the State
Right.
Fair and other things like that.
Right. That is awesome. So tell me a little bit about your background. I believe you were in real estate.
Yes.
Right? That's kind of when I first met you, that's what you were doing.
Yes. So I it's so funny, too, because I had right out of college, I went to a small community college in Watertown. I had left a semester and a half into it, or a year and a half into it, to pursue being a salesperson for a digital mobile billboard company that was already there up north. Mm-hmm. They were franchising the idea. That was the whole thing. And they sold too many franchises. They sold them to the wrong people, and that concept failed. Mm. And then that's kind of where my opportunity came to, get into more of a role than just a salesperson, mm. as that business was crumbled and one of the people left the business. And, so I was doing it there. We were good, and then we were like, we got to grow. So mm-hmm. we came to Cicero. We came to the Syracuse area. We kept growing, and I had owned like a very small portion of the company, but mm-hmm. I was managing and operating it. It was great. And there got to a point where I just could not agree with my partner's decisions. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with his mindset. And it wasn't a sporadic thing. It was a very hard decision to make. So I ended up having to make the decision to leave. So I think it was right when I got my real estate license, I had to put my mind or my energy into something.
Right.
Because it was like the world's worst breakup. It was worse than a breakup. I never felt that, you just lost. It was incredible.
You think a big part experience. Of that was because you were so emotionally invested in the business?
100%. Yeah. From 19 years old, that was my identity, was building that business.
Right.
And I don't mean identity like, oh, that's who I was. It's what, I mean, like, that's where I put every little drop of sweat into. That's anytime I had free time, that's what I was thinking of. That's what I was doing. I made so many sacrifices just mm-hmm. to get to that point and for it just for me just to left the company and it was all gone. And I thought I was done with it. I was like, I'm going to go into real estate. I love real estate. I love networking. It's going to be awesome.
Right.
I get my real estate license and it was 3 weeks. It took me 3 weeks to get it done because, you know, I was just doing that. And I really knew within days that I wasn't done. I absolutely wasn't done. And I had to continue in one way or another. So from there, you know, first talks were hoping I can get an investor to buy him out. And that I probably talked to 150 people over that course of 6 months, because it was 6 months that I was away from the business. And man, I kept bringing in people. I kept trying to make it, you know, just this person, and this person. And then I ended up having a group of people. And then, as you know, Karate John came in and kind of really helped me out there and invested in the business and gave me the opportunity to get back at it.
Yep.
So it got to the point where 6 months after I had left, the business was crumbled. I mean, it was gone. They were down to no client. They had one client.
Hmm.
And so the price was really good at that point.
Sure.
And I had to just build it right back up from where we were.
So it sounds like you have this really classical and intense entrepreneur mindset.
Yeah, fortunately, right? Unfortunately.
Which you started, you know, down that path very young. I mean, yes. 19.
Yeah.
Right? As a teenager. But you got a taste of that. And that sounds like that's the fire that really drives you.
100%. I mean, that 6 months where I was away from what I loved, it was truly, it was a very creative time period. And it was a really, you know, self-discovery time. I got to learn a lot about myself and I got to learn a lot about what I wanted to do. I could not let it go. I wasn't done with what I believed it can be and what it should be.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we truly are helping these small businesses that don't have much to be able to be seen. And when we make it work and when we get results for these clients,
right.
I've never felt anything more fulfilling.
So talk a little bit, if you can, about the results. What are, on average, you know, your clients seeing? Are they seeing direct business or opportunities for business from, you know, this venture with you?
So absolutely, like, you know, to point out, like, some of my favorite success stories of our course, of course, are the ones that work right away. Like,
sure.
You know, when we first get started again, we got Stan's Tint Shop on the truck. And within 2 days, first of all, it was a hard sell because he was booked out for 6 months. So he didn't need any business. It was really hard to convince him, but I just knew he liked it. I knew I had it. So we ended up working out a deal. And within 2 days, he's like, I'm getting texts from the ads. He's like, we got to turn those off. So he only did the 1 month, which
right.
is great. We want those type
so
of
he
results.
He got a quick
right
taste
there.
of good results.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
But obviously, marketing is a very subjective thing, right? It depends on what kind of business you are. Do you track that? What are you selling? How are you offering it? What's your messaging? So, you know, the tracking is a big part. We are still developing really effective ways to track and gauge what we're doing. But if the business owner isn't tracking it, it's hard to tell for me most of the time.
Right.
But obviously, again, my favorite stories are the ones where it works right away.
Right.
And when you get specific with the messaging, it works. I mean,
right.
At the end of the day, it's a TV on wheels. It's right in front of people.
Right.
It's guaranteed impressions.
Right.
You can't skip it.
It's in front of so many eyeballs.
Exactly.
Right.
So, like, at the end of the day, until I develop a way that's like, oh, you're going to spend this, you're going to get this, you're going to get that, it's still an incredible value. You're getting in front of people in a way that no other media can.
Right.
Again, it's guaranteed impressions. It's unskippable.
Yeah. If there are aspiring entrepreneurs, young people like yourself out there, if you had a couple pieces of advice to give from your journey so far, because from what I've seen in the short time that you've been on this path that I've known you, I've seen that business turn a corner. I mean, you're in a very different place than you were a handful of months ago.
Absolutely.
True, right? And we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the financial stuff about a week and a half ago when we were at an event together.
Yes.
So if there are some aspiring young entrepreneurs that have that same kind of mindset, what would you share with them from your learnings?
Without a doubt, like the two words that are front of mind and that I truly believe have changed my life for the better is persistence and determination. I believe there are very few things in this world that we can't accomplish with persistence and determination. It is not only in general, but especially in my generation and in the way the world's moving right now.
Right.
If you show an ounce of common sense and an ounce of hard work, you can take over the world. You will get opportunities left and right. It is incredible how many people there are around this area and just everywhere who are willing to give you an opportunity if you're willing to work for it.
Right.
So, I mean, really, the persistence is the hardest thing. I've been at this in different realms and for 3 or 4 years now. And I got started as a salesperson, and then I watched that business fail. And then I started as, you know, a higher up, a little piece of ownership, and I had to build that from the ground up. And I watched him and his, you know, my old business partner and, you know, what I would consider greed or other things. I got to watch that make it fail. And then, you know, so it's the persistence to be able to get back up and work so hard just to do something I've done again. It really takes a lot out of you, but it is one of the things that will get you anywhere.
So don't give up.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, you can always make it happen no matter how much time, no matter how many conversations you got to have.
Right.
I mean, like I said, for 6 months, I didn't take a full-time job or anything. I was just selling the idea of this business again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was incredibly hard. You know, there were points where, I mean, I was door dashing for money just so I could, you know, continue to pay my bills and stuff. And, you know, it takes a lot out of you to have to go from, you know, selling advertising and managing a fun business like this to going and doing that. And, you know? So it's the persistence it's really key.
So you took what could be conceived, at least in the short term, as some failures, but you didn't let that stop you.
No, I changed it every time. Every time I developed.
You learned from it?
Yes.
What do I need to do different? How am I going to change the approach?
Yep.
And you moved on.
Yeah, the way we're doing it today is incomparable to what we were doing 4 years ago.
Right.
It is a very different model. I talked to digital mobile billboard operators across the country because they're in places like Las Vegas and Chicago and New York City, these big cities. Nobody is doing what we're doing, and it makes me really happy to know, because especially in the last few months, I've really felt that we found our model.
Yeah.
We hit our stride and we know what we're offering.
And the model is more in how you're selling that ad space and the offerings to the businesses.
Yeah, it's all about like sectioning off a huge opportunity that would, you know, a normal digital mobile billboard company would sell to like T-Mobile or AT&T.
Right.
And we're sectioning it off so multiple small businesses can reach these crowds and can, you know, really get their message out there. They're paying way less.
Right.
And we're getting more volume out of it.
Right. So collectively, they pay less because it's a shared space.
Yes.
But they're getting the same value, or actually a big multiplier in value for what they're spending.
Absolutely. Because just like, you know, being a lawyer or whatever, like there is a standard digital mobile billboard hourly rate out there.
Sure.
And, you know, it's just, again, it is a different way of selling it and a different way of our identity, really. Because again, like it's really big about promoting small businesses.
Yep.
It is a huge need in this area,
mm-hmm.
especially, I mean, you really can't get your name out there for less than $700 a month with a 3-month contract. And we really want to combat that. And if you want to get on a billboard, you're going to be paying a couple thousand.
Right.
Just to be in one place all the way up there where you
right.
got to crank your neck to look at, you know?
Right.
So we really try to offer an incredible value that it's just hard to beat.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I love the way the wheels have continually been turning to find, right, as you said, to bring value, real value to your clients. And yet, right, you still have to make a profit off of this, right?
So absolutely.
How do you bring those pieces together? I want to, if we could, to go back and revisit that persistence. And
yes.
This ties really closely to what I deal with when I'm doing leadership development with people, whether it's individuals or groups, right? Because I always talk about attitude kind of being the secret sauce, right?
Yes.
Most people think about developing as a leader or really in any area of life, and they typically think about, well, there are certain skills and certain knowledge that I'm going to have to pick up and develop. Yep. That's true, right? But there is no sustainable change without a change in attitude.
Yes.
Right? And a lot of that goes to keeping a positive attitude, right? And also, you know, a lot of things we talk about go back to don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
Because in reality, if you're going to progress, whether it's as an entrepreneur or a leader of an organization or both, you're going to have failures, 100%. Right? You're going to try stuff. It's not going to work. What are you going to do then?
You got to choose to fail forward or fail backwards.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
there's a great story we use in one of the programs I use for leadership development, and it's about Abraham Lincoln, our 16th president. Everybody thinks about Lincoln as one of our, and rightfully so, one of our greatest presidents, right?
Absolutely.
For the time that he served as president and dealing with the Civil War and everything that went with it. But the story of Lincoln's life is fascinating that most people don't read in the history books when we're kids. The fact is that he basically failed at every step of his life, right? He was a failed lawyer because he really couldn't make any money at it. He was a failed politician before he wasn't. He was a failure in business, but he never let it stop him. He kept learning, moving on, learn, move on, learn, move on. You know, and ultimately, you could say he's one of the greatest success stories, you know, maybe in American history.
I've never heard that story.
I'll send it to you. You know, it's only a page long. It's kind of a summary, right, of his life. But they don't tell you who they're talking about at first. They're like, well, here's what it is. And then they tell you who it is. And you're really.
I like it, though, because it really is all about how you look at it and how you view failure.
That's right.
Because we live in a world where so much of what we feel or do is for other people. Especially in a world of social media. So I think a lot of the fear of failure is the fear of your friends and family seeing you fail and start back from square one.
Well, sure. It's the emotional hangover or impact, if you will, of failure, right? And
yes.
And everybody thinks, well, I fell on my face. You know, I'm a disgrace. Well, only if you let it, right? Only if you view it that way.
Absolutely.
You know, so
it's the best way to learn. It's a surefire way to learn. People can tell you things.
Absolutely.
They can tell you this or that. But if you bankrupt a company or something, you're going to learn.
Experience is an incredible teacher,
yes.
Right? I mean, I know I still personally remember the painful failures in my career much more clearly and much more viscerally today than I do a lot of the successes, right? Because it brought pain. You know, some of that emotional pain, you know.
Absolutely.
The interesting thing, too, with leadership is, and you've already learned this lesson very young, so as you continue to grow your business and found and build other businesses, which I'm sure you'll do, I'm sure you've learned this lesson, which many leaders don't until they're older from other life experiences, and it's very simple. You have to allow your people the right to fail.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're never going to get better as an organization, right? And if you have the kind of culture in an organization that punishes failure, which most companies are going to say, oh, no, we don't do that. But in reality, if you look at what happens internally, that's exactly what they do.
It's incredibly true, too. I mean, there were, again, like with my old business partner.
Right.
I had to leave, but there were things in managing that business that I was like, oh, he was so wrong. And then when I got the opportunity to do it, I tried it out. I'm like, oh, he was right. Like, that's not the way to do it. But he didn't let me try it. He didn't give me a reasoning. Like, you really got to understand it more than just face value. Oh, that doesn't work or that works.
Right.
Because real curious minds have to try.
Right.
I have to try or else it just...
Right.
Okay, it didn't work for you.
Right.
It didn't work this way. It didn't work that way. What if I throw, you know?
Right.
I'm always going to just... When you have a curious mind, you're always going to slightly doubt other people's advice in terms of that specifically.
Sure. And people don't grow and develop, and organizations don't grow and develop unless you have that some of that trial and error.
You got to get the thick skin somehow.
Right. You know, I won't use any names, but the best owner I ever worked for told me one time, you see that factory? You can do anything you want out there, Mark. I don't care as long as it's not irreversible and nobody gets hurt. Talk about a blank slate.
Absolutely.
What a cool guy to work for, you know, and he meant it because I took him at his word and you know, what a wonderful approach. And as you talked about learning from the good and the bad from people that you've worked for and worked with, so have I, right? And that's a great learning. I've always tried to take the best bosses I ever had and some of that weren't so good and, you know, always distill that down and what should it look like?
Absolutely.
You know, when did I feel most productive and most appreciated and most a part of and the most successful, you know, and what did that situation look like? And to learn from that and constantly be learning from that, that's a great point. Where do you go from here? What's the future for Zach? And I know we talked a little bit in the past few weeks, but what would you tell our listeners about what's down the road?
That's so tough to say, but you know, in the last year or so, I've definitely realized that no matter what I do, my near future at least, I genuinely love working with small business owners, and it's not just because I like helping them or all, you know, all this cliche sales stuff. No, I love learning from them. Mm. I get to meet incredible people like you guys, and I get to learn. Mm. I am constantly learning, and I'm constantly developing. And I want to surround myself with people who I believe are intelligent, people who I want to be like. And, you know, take all those people, and I mean, especially if you can start at such a young age, you get a really, really good, you know, lesson or some really good, you know, things to learn from.
Yeah, I really appreciate that because I feel exactly the same way. Right. One of the coolest things about my business is I go into all kinds of organizations.
Yes.
You know, for-profit, some not-for-profit. I could tell you I just had a conversation with a business person actually from overseas this morning on the phone. And we were having this conversation. I said, you know, I love the fact that I was involved mostly in manufacturing and mostly in upstate New York for most of my adult life. So there's a cadre of people, right, and connections that I made in that life.
Yeah.
When I started this business, it just totally exponentially grew people like yourself and people in all these different businesses that I would have never, you know, connected with.
Absolutely.
And I learn from them every day, and it's very cool, right? Their product or service that I had really never given any thought to before, yeah. Right? And then you see what their struggles and challenges are and what their successes are. But, you know, it's very cool, too, because it still boils down to a lot of what we're talking about here today. I like to say that basically all of business and all of life is about relationships.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you have the ability to form really good relationships based on one of my other favorite words, trust,
yeah.
Right? If you can earn other people's trust, right, and surround yourself with people that you trust and believe in, that is success.
Yeah. It's a game changer.
That's success.
As someone who came from a very, you know, smaller area,
yeah,
it's just still, it amazes me. I've been here for almost 3 years or two years.
Where'd you grow up?
So I always say Watertown, New York, because that's where most people know.
Right.
But actually Brownville, you know, okay. Right outside of Watertown, very, very small little village.
Small town.
Yeah. You know how it's small town. It,
yeah.
Again, it's the mentality.
Yeah.
It's mindset and mentality. It's the biggest thing because I like the thing you said about attitude too, because, you know, if you're a jerk and you're persistent, that's not going to get you anywhere. So that's assuming they had a good attitude.
Well, part of the attitude is keeping an open mind.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it goes to communication too. I tell people hear the word or the term communication and they think what? Speaking. Being a good public speaker and all that. And there's all kinds of programs that can help you with that. And that is important, right? Whether you're in sales or almost any line of business, you're going to have to be able to speak well and communicate.
Yes.
But what people fail to understand, most of communication is really about listening.
Yeah.
And then asking the questions that continue to spin the top and get the person you're talking to open up more and to delve a little deeper for themselves. You know, I use that term spinning the top, and like when I'm doing a one-on-one coaching, I love it when I see the light bulb, like they all of a sudden see something differently for the first time.
Yes.
That aha moment. And I think to myself, there it is.
Absolutely.
There it is. You know, and then they start spinning a little deeper. So I've never said I'm the answer man, right? I don't pretend. I can't possibly have all the answers. The older I get, the more I realize I don't even always have the right questions. But if I keep helping them dig a little deeper, peel the onion a little more, right, they get to a point, and ultimately they get to that moment where they see things from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's a value, right? And you know, we talked earlier about gaining those different perspectives from, you know, the hard experience, right, and from our failures, and that's also a huge part of that attitude.
Yeah, yeah, and I think again, to kind of add on to the question, because there's so many ways that I could go with a question like what's next and what's, you know, so
yeah.
The other side of it is there have been, you know, people in my life, especially in the last 3 years, that have, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but they absolutely changed my life just by knowing them and having a relationship with them. And, you know, when you give someone hope, I think that's one of the strongest things in the world.
Absolutely.
If you're giving it or if you're taking it away, it can make the most incredible difference. And there are a few people who gave me hope on the way, you know, to where I am right now. And you look back at it, you're just like, those are the most incredible people ever. And I would love to be that person to someone. So, and, you know, down the road, I want more than anything just to be able to help people who are in my position, because it means the world. It means more than anything, you know? And then to be more specific about my industry, I just want to keep finding ways, especially as our world keeps getting more distracted and more entertained, I just want to keep finding ways to get these small businesses seen, because they are they're some of the most resilient, passionate people you'll ever meet in your entire life. And a lot of them are doing it just for them or just for their customers.
Yep.
And they deserve to be seen without spending a bunch of money.
Right.
And I want to continually, whether it's the trucks, whether it's them on trailers, digital screens in general, I'm just going to continue finding what that is and how I can keep developing it. Because marketing, it's always going to change. Especially in the way technology is right now, it changes all the time.
Right.
Being in anything to do with technology is a very exhausting industry. Looking over there, because it's constant keep up.
Yeah.
And things can change in hours or minutes. So
right.
I would like to be that, you know, to be that person so they don't have to sit there and continually develop their marketing strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. And I love the fact that, you know, you kind of talked about becoming a mentor, right?
And it's like my dream. Like I want to be my perfect example. I would love to be, you know, just a you know, angel investor, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, just I want to help multiple people. I want to set up some platform or something, because I could never say enough about what that influence means.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've seen the value of when other people gave you hope. And I'm assuming, could be wrong, but tell me so if I am, but I'm assuming a lot of that was really they just offered you some really strong encouragement to not give up, to keep going.
And some of them were the smallest things in the world. Some of them were an educator in high school who you know, said what I was doing was cool, or you know, I had a project that I literally, in English, I had a project that I made all about entrepreneurship.
Yep.
I thought it was so stupid. Like I wasn't going to turn it in. And she's like, oh, that's so cool. And you know, I remember her every single day.
Yep.
It's little things and it's big things. It's the Karate Johns of the world too.
Sure.
That were willing to put their financial, you know, picture on the line, or even if it didn't, you know, affect it, or even if it was a big influence or had opportunity to affect it in a negative way.
Mm.
It's just crazy.
No matter how you slice it, there's still a level of risk.
I couldn't even put it into words what it means.
But really, isn't that cool? Because we do remember those people, right? That at the time might not seem like a big deal, but in hindsight were so critical because it literally kind of altered the course and the path of our lives.
100%. You make it. I mean, it's all about Steve Jobs is all – I always love you know, his story, and you have said, you know, you connect the dots. It's so much easier looking backwards.
Yes.
So much easier looking backwards.
That's
true.
To connect the dots. Yeah, we don't always see that puzzle and how it's going together until after the fact. But that's a great point, right, for hopefully our listeners to remember as well, that you can be that source of hope for somebody, and it doesn't take a lot sometimes. No. Just that little bit of encouragement and you know, hey, don't give up. You're on the right path, right? Sometimes it's hard when you're a change agent, right? Yeah. Because human nature is change adverse.
Well, especially when you're, you know, or maybe it's an entrepreneur thing, maybe it's a sales thing, but especially when you don't know how they actually feel. Mm-hmm. You have no idea how good they are at putting on that face.
That's right.
I mean, you're incredible. Like, I won't show up to work sad. I'll show up to work as my energetic self. It's
right.
So you don't know what that encouragement or the opposite of it will do to that person.
That's right. That's right. That's a great takeaway. Well, Zach, again, I want to thank you for coming on. I just absolutely love your enthusiasm, your passion. It's infectious. Don't lose that ever as you go on in life. And, you know, I look forward to seeing all the things that are coming next for you. So I really look forward to it. And, you know, if I can ever be of help, even just to talk through something or bounce something around, you know how to get a hold of me.
I appreciate that. And you know I'm going to take you up on that.
Anytime. Thanks again, bro.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
That'll do it for our first guest today. We'll be back shortly with our second guest, mystery guest. All right. Welcome to part two of our episode number 7 of Operations Excellence Podcast. And I have the distinct pleasure of introducing my mystery guest, not such a mystery, Mr. Mike Brindisi. Mike.
Hi, buddy.
So good to have you on.
I'm honored to be on here. I feel like I'm ruining the show, to be honest. This is a very distinguished, amazing show, and I'm very honored you asked me. I really was. I'm usually sitting over there helping Danny produce this, and
you're usually on the other side of the mic and camera.
Yeah, and you asked me if you had a cancellation and asked if I'd be on, and I really am honored. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and you're welcome. I'm just fascinated because you and I have had a chance to talk over the last several months as we've been doing this podcast and coming in to do. Record these podcasts, and I've gotten to know you a little bit and a little bit about your story, and I just think it's fascinating. Mm. So I know you do comedy, you're producing the podcast, and I know you guys talk, you know, you're a personality in your own right on the Good News York podcast, but if you could tell our listeners, you know, maybe the Cliff Note versions of the Mike Brindisi story.
Yeah, you know, I've been asked this question before, and I'm getting better at it. I suck at it because it's a long story, but I will put it in a nutshell. But it's been a journey. It's been a lot of twists and turns. But essentially, to keep it short, I've spent 20 something years performing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, started in school with acting and stuff like that, and then community theater. And so I thought I was going to be an actor, and but then I got bit with the music bug, and I started playing music in my late teens, early 20s, was in a couple of bands, started my own band called the New York Rock, and we toured the country and released 3 albums on our own. Inside of all of that, at the same time, I was also doing stand-up comedy for a while, which I'm doing again, and on the radio in the Ithaca area. And it's just been a journey of trying to find myself as a performer. And then the second part of that was finding out, how do I make a living doing that?
Mm.
And it's been a lot of heartache. It's been a lot of traveling and change and a lot of letdowns. But I've learned so much, and it's brought me here. It was, give me a microphone and I can make you laugh. I can write and sing you a song. I could talk sports with you. I just love to entertain people,
right.
And I have such a passion for entertaining people. And you know, I think maybe when I was younger, the fortune and fame aspect of it was a thing. But as I get older, I really don't give a shit about that stuff. You know, I mean, I think in this kind of business or any sort of performance art, I think fame is just kind of a byproduct of some of your success. It doesn't mean everything, but it certainly shouldn't be the main focus. I learned, you know, don't go out there and get out there to be famous. Do it for self fulfillment and to touch others and reach others with whatever you're expressing, and then the rest will come along.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. You seem to have arrived at a really pretty good place in your life.
Yeah.
Just from talking to you, and I get that sense that this guy is comfortable in his own skin and likes what he's doing.
Yeah. You've met me at a time in my life where I kind of taken a breath, like, finally. As I said, I just was trying to find my way. Am I a comedian? Am I a musician? Am I a musical comedian? Am I a radio host? I don't know, because I have, you know, all of that talent kind of goes together, you know, mm-hmm. and they all kind of complement each other. But it's made it very hard to focus on one. And because of my own ADHD and other you know, personal struggles through my life, I've struggled with finding my way. And as I said, it became, well, I'm starting a family, and I just want to get paid doing what I'm good at and what I love. And unfortunately, in entertainment, there's you don't go to, you know, if you want to be a welder, you go to school and then you go to welding school and you become a welder. You know, there really is no clear cut way. And if I was to pull out of a hat 10 celebrities that I look up to, no story is the same. Everybody right. found their way. You know, there's no blueprint for being successful in the entertainment industry. And you know, after performing for years and trying to find my way, I went back to school at Ithaca College. I said, you know, I'm going to take one more shot at really making this a career. I got two kids, and I went back to school at 36 and graduated at 40 from Ithaca College for radio television. It's now called television and digital media production. I busted my ass, and I graduated, and I don't know what I was expecting, but there was about 2 years where I was in a very, very dark place because I had a family relying on me. I thought maybe through job placement out of the Park School at Ithaca College, it would be a smoother transition. I couldn't find work. I applied to over 75 jobs in the entertainment industry via Zoom, traveling all over the place. And, you know, I had to drive Uber and Grubhub, and then I worked in the school system in Ithaca, whatever I had to do. And I thought it was hopeless, and all that to say, and then out of nowhere comes Matt, who I've known my entire life, Matt Mazur, owner of Growth Mode Technologies and Growth Mode Content, this whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking for, a senior content producer for a new content company he's launching. And someone that's comfortable on air. And I went, well, Jesus Christ. I remember, you know, Matt and I were acquaintances. We didn't really hang out. We were from neighboring towns.
Right.
So I wrote him a message and I said, dude, I'll do it. And it's still amazing to me. He says, are you serious? And I said, yeah. He goes, dude, I swear to God, you were who I was picturing when I posted this job listing, but I just didn't think you were available or able to do it. It was just meant to be.
Yep.
And so you've met me at a time where I thought it was over. I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, but it's not going to be what I love. And then this came along, and here I am being paid to finally, you know, I'm self-fulfilled by being on the air and writing for Good News York in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also getting to scratch the itch of producing other people's podcasts. So, yeah, I am finally in a good place. It feels amazing.
You said so much there, you know.
I know.
I don't like, which is great, which is one of the reasons I love talking to you. You and our first guest, Zach, have some things in common, is you both have this high energy and a lot of passion for what you do and love it. I just love it.
It's
like plugging into the socket once again, right? Mark gets to come along and get some of that juice, right? Which I love. But, you know, I don't like cliches, but I think this is one that fits. You know, they say sometimes it's darkest right before the dawn, and you went through a really dark period, but you didn't give up, right?
I didn't.
And then, you know, that break happens, right? So it kind of goes to what Zach was talking about earlier. Sometimes it's just about persistence and hanging in there.
You know,
doing the next thing that you need to do.
Absolutely, Mark. And thank you for a compliment. I love you, man. You're an amazing person, and you inspire me every time I'm producing your podcast. And you know, you and Zach were talking about relationships, and and you and I have talked about that before. And I mean, what a perfect example of relationships. Because I made a connection with Matt decades ago.
Right.
Who the hell would have thought decades later he's the one that gives me a break?
Yeah.
You know, and it was no there's no plans, right? And no, I never gave up. I think at times I did mentally just think it's over, you know. There's just this thing inside of me that I can't lay down and die. It's who I am.
Right.
And thanks to those relationships, it's gotten me to where I am. But I think one thing I learned along the way was that I should have never paid attention to preconceived notions. That's something I would tell somebody.
Yeah.
Because I had it all mapped out by the time I was 24 years old. I know I'm gonna do music. I'll hopefully get a deal, you know, at the time record. I'll get a record deal, and then, you know, I can cross over into comedy and acting and kind of do a dual. Oh, I had the whole thing.
Sure.
And guess what? None of it happened that way.
Sure.
And you know, that's, I think, a big part of it, too. You know, relationships, communication, and encouragement.
Yeah.
That was the big one of me not giving up, was the encouragement from family, friends.
Sure.
Like you, you now. And that was a big part of it. But I also think if I had gotten rid of preconceived notions and kind of enjoyed the ride instead of worrying about the destination, I think this would have been a lot easier on me.
That's a great takeaway maybe for our listeners, is because you said something else about the entertainment industry, which I think is true in all industry. And what I think you said, and I'm going to paraphrase, is, geez, if I picked the 10 people I admire the most in entertainment and looked at how they got where they are, no two stories are the same.
That's right.
There is no cookie cutter exact, right? And I'm going to tell you that's true, because you meet owners of businesses and senior executives, and there might be similarities between stories, but there are so many different paths.
Yeah.
And it's not always what you think until you get to know somebody and go, wow, that's a really interesting path, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody's path is a little different. So I think if you can set aside, like you just said, preconceived notions, but yet focus on what the passion is. Because typically what I have passion for is what I'm going to be good at, because that's where I'm going to spend my energies developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have talked a ton about golf.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I am not a naturally gifted golfer. I'm just telling you, I'm not. But I love the game and fell in love with it many years ago.
Same.
And devoted the time, because I was blessed enough to have an early teacher that said to me, I want to teach you how to practice.
Mm.
Best lesson I ever had.
That's a great line. I'm not going to teach you how to golf. I'm going to teach you how to practice.
Taught me how to practice,
that's
right? Because his point was, most people, when they go to the driving range, right, just instill all their bad habits.
Yeah, you're just re-practicing bad habits.
Right. So he taught me how to practice, and then over the years, I was blessed to come in contact with other teaching pros that, you know, watch my swing and would come down. I had one gentleman in Mississippi when I lived there. I used to go to the driving range 3 or 4 times a week, because I would go at lunch. I would go have a quick sandwich. It was 5 minutes from the plant, and I would go hit balls at lunch and go back to work. Mm. He would come down and say, what are you working on today? And I'd tell him, and like, I got a ton of free lessons from this guy.
Yeah.
Right? But he taught me some of the really interesting things and to learn. But the point is, I have a passion for it. That's where I put a lot of energy and time. It made me a better golfer.
Right.
Over time.
And, you know, there's something to be said. And again, I'm not a big fan of cliches either, but man, sometimes they're right. And, right. And you know, going back to the preconceived notions and, you know, that whole thing, I, you know, you hear that, you got to enjoy the journey to get, you know, or the main thing I hear you talk about and other great, you know, successful entrepreneurs is that you got to focus. Don't focus on the long term. Focus on the small goals to get you to the next goal. And that, because what I would do is I pictured the end game and how I had to get there. And without knowing it, I was skipping steps and the things I needed to do to get to the next level, to get me to the next level, to finally get me there. And I've just found so much incredible value in slowing down and going, okay, here's in the short term what I want to accomplish and whatever I'm doing. Because what ends up happening is all of a sudden 20 years goes by and you blink your eyes and you go, you might still feel like I didn't get to where I thought I was going to go. Holy shit, but look what I've built.
Right.
Or look, you know, and through therapy too, I've learned I've got to start appreciating what I do have and how far I've come, as opposed to being upset at what I didn't accomplish yet and worrying about what the future.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. A couple of great points is it's really, really important, right? To the yardstick is never forget where you came from.
That's right.
Right. And to shift gears a little bit, you're talking about goals and dreams. A lot of people I work with, right, because they tend to be at least geared a little bit more towards the technical, right, and the black and white, they're pretty good at setting short-term goals, right, kind of the reverse of what you're talking about. Where they struggle is stepping back, taking off the constraints and dreaming big, and allowing themselves to actually put down on paper in black and white what their dreams are.
Wow.
You know, what do I aspire to? Right. So it's important that people do that, but then the steps to create, okay, now what do the goals look
like? What's the end game? Yeah.
Right. But you can't accomplish long-term goals. And this is what you were talking about in your struggles. You can't accomplish long-term goals without setting those short-term goals.
Huh.
Right. So you create like, okay, I want to become a single-digit handicap, and today I'm an 18 handicap. Well, that's not going to happen in a week. It's not going to happen in a month, and it probably isn't going to happen in the first year. All right, but what's my plan? And then you break it down and say, okay, this week, this is what I'm going to do. And next week, this is what I'm going to do,
right?
And I can measure my progress. How am I doing, right? And you adjust the goals as you go. The same thing with any other big goal in life, right? But it is really important, because I think it's great to set high goals.
Sure.
Right? They should be stretch. They should be realistically high, like they're not unachievable, right? But if I aim here, and today I'm here, and I come in here, that's still pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Right? Look at where I've come from. Look at what I've accomplished. But that also, hopefully, and for most people, it absolutely does, it's like the engine, right? Because we love that sense of accomplishment. It's built into us. I think it's hardwired into humans. Mm-hmm. Wow, look at that. Wow, that feels good. I set out I want to lose 30 pounds, and it's going to be a longer time frame. But you know what? This month I lost 10 pounds. I feel better. I sleep better. I'm more active. You know, all that stuff that goes with it. Okay, now that's the fire.
Yes.
Keeps feeding that fire, right? Now I'm geared up to go do more, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to have the ability to step back and allow yourself to dream without constraints. Like I tell people, it's a blank piece of paper exercise. No constraints. Forget about what your current situation is. If I gave you a blank piece of paper and said, describe to me what your life is going to be like in 20 years, right? In your perfect dream. Just give it a shot. All right. Now, how much of that is achievable if you put your energy and your mind to it?
Right. And if I do this today, that'll be a step closer to whatever that is.
One step at a time.
But it sounds so cool. You hear people say that all the time. Well, you just make short-term goals and you just keep chipping away. But it's so true. It's
right.
If you do the work, I mean, there's one guaranteed way to fail, and that's to never do it or to give up.
Well, and that's what stops most people, right? It's fear.
Yeah.
It's fear of the unknown. And you know, one of the things we talk about in leadership development that I do with people in groups is, and it's not always the fear of failure. Actually, some people have a fear of success.
Absolutely.
Right? And then we kind of poo-poo when people give us kudos. Like, hey, you're really good at that. Oh, well, you know. why not let your light shine brightly? Because you give other people permission to do the same when you do that.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not doing myself or anybody else any favors by diminishing what I am. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, I'm all that in a bag of chips, right, and I'm great, or overstating, just simply, you know, be clear-eyed about what you are good at.
Yeah.
And accept that and allow other people to see that, because, again, I think that's doing them a favor. It allows them permission to let that their light shine, if you will, their ability shine to
absolutely
shine.
Absolutely. I actually learned something from you from one of your episodes when I was producing it, where you simply just said, hey, if someone's gives you a compliment, accept it and say thank you.
Yeah.
That is such a simple thought, but it goes such a long way.
Don't we all struggle with that?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I just turned 62.
I'm always like, oh, stop. Yeah.
I'm not a youngster. I turned 62 the other day, Mike, and I can still, like, there's a part of me, right, when some, like, you say something nice to me or Danny or somebody in my course of my business day or whatever, right, something nice. You know, my first reaction can still be, oh, it's uncomfortable, so I want to downplay it.
Right.
Just say thank you, right, and accept it and be grateful.
And that's what
somebody else. Somebody else has recognized you for something you do well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm still terrible at it on the golf course.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. My friend will say, wow, that was a great shot. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it had 10 yards, too much draw, or.
Right. I should have clubbed up, or I didn't hit it flush.
You know, instead of just saying thank you.
Instead of saying, hey, thanks.
Yeah.
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 That's something I took from you, and I think it's important for both parties, you know? You're not dismissing the compliments they're giving you, but without you even knowing it, it helps you, it encourages you.
Right.
You know, it encourages you, you know, just that little compliment, like, hey, all right, okay. You know, because it's hard to notice progress sometimes or any, you know, it's hard to measure yourself sometimes. It's good to hear it from other people.
Yeah, we need that external input, but I also think it's important, you know, and you walk a fine line here, like I can't be the kind of person that needs, absolutely must have external, you know, kudos.
No, yeah.
To survive. And a lot of that, I think, just gets to, you know, how comfortable are you in your own skin, and do you really know yourself, right, and what you are good at and what you aren't good at.
Yeah, I heard a great, and I'm going to ironically probably butcher it, but it was like a quote basically saying, you know, don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't ask advice from.
Yeah, that's a great
point. And I just, that was recent that I heard that, and I went, whoa.
Well, there's a lot of cynics out there, and sometimes, right, other people, and I will say, certainly at different points in my life, I've been guilty of this, where I can put other people down to make myself feel better, right? And that exists out there.
Oh, God.
Right? And yeah. And so, you know, the people that I care about and that care about me in my life, I'm okay with constructive criticism.
Sure.
You know, but that's being open-minded. But the difference is when you have somebody that is not comfortable in their own skin and understanding where they're coming from and not allowing it to dictate how I feel about myself.
And that's it. That's right? The key, is not taking it for what it is.
Yeah.
And not internalizing it and allow it to dictate, you know, how you feel about yourself.
Yeah, and we're touching a little bit now on one of my other favorite topics, which is emotional intelligence, right? And people all the time want to say, oh, so-and-so did this, so they made me feel this way. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, frankly, I immediately hit the bullshit button because nobody makes me feel anything, right? My emotions are mine, just like your emotions are yours. Like, if you're pissed off, that's on you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I did something to offend you, being a mature adult, then I should take ownership of that and make apologies and move on, right? But how you feel is how you feel, how I feel is how I feel. And putting, you know, once I start allowing other people to dictate how I feel, haven't I given away my freedom?
100%. You've given them all the power.
Why would I do that, right? And yet, don't a lot of us do that on a regular basis?
All the time.
And that's a... That's a big part of emotional intelligence, is understanding that how I feel is how I feel. It's typically not right or wrong. It's just how I feel. It's really what I do with those emotions. And learning how to not react based on emotion, right, which is really critical in any situation, certainly if you're a leader. But then also understanding there's a fine line. I can't stuff my emotions. I have to learn how to work through them. Because early part of my life, I will tell you, into my 30s probably, I was a stuffer. Like, I would not show emotion in much of anything. And yet, it would eventually come out. It's like the pressure cooker, right? You turn up the steam and that pressure enough, eventually you're going to go above the rating for that pressure device and it's going to pop, right? That's what would happen.
I had my sister and her boss on this morning. They're both mental health professionals. And we were talking similarly about that where, you know, I learned in therapy that it's like, imagine you're a barrel, right? And your emotions are water or your problems. And so the idea is through therapy or meditation, whatever your outlet is to get that barrel down. Because what happens is if you wake up and your barrel's already here, it's going to take one thing to let it, to make
it
explode.
That's
so when you see people flipping out and having road rage, right? Or you know, flipping out and being what they call a Karen now on social media, whatever they're yelling about isn't really what the problem is.
Right. You don't
it's
know what's going on.
It's everything else going
That's
on
right.
in their life. And
That's right.
Mark, I'll be completely honest. The thing I think that has been the thing I've struggled with the absolute most in my life is controlling emotion. I have worked so hard on it, and I'm still working every day.
Yeah.
But because of again, I always talk about ADHD, which is funny that I'm wearing this today. But because of that, and also just not having the emotional intelligence I should have for a long time, I very much was reactionary and let my emotions get the best of me, and I have worked so hard at it. Because it is so important. You
right.
know, there's feelings and there's emotions, and you know, feelings are feelings. You can't feel guilty about your feelings, but you can feel guilty about the actions or the way that you do react. You know, it is so important.
So instead of feeling guilty, it's learn from it, make the adjustments, then move on.
And taking ownership.
That's right.
That's liberating.
Yeah.
That was something I was never able to do.
Yeah.
Well, and then I make an excuse. So-and-so
made me feel.
I did. Right. But once I learned self-awareness and to control emotions, there's something that feels really good when I go, you know what? I was wrong. I'm sorry.
Right.
And it's good for the situation and the relationship, whatever that is in the moment, but it's for yourself, too.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You're human.
Yeah.
You made a mistake, man. Absolutely. It's all right. I have much more respect for someone that's like, hey, I was wrong.
Absolutely. It's interesting because I even hear it in business settings sometimes that wouldn't it be liberating if people just said, yeah, I screwed up, instead of, well, if so-and-so would have done this, then I wouldn't have, you know, blah, blah, blah.
If they didn't.
But, you know, in organizations, that starts with the leadership. You know, does the leadership own their mistakes? And if the answer is no, then you're not going to see a culture that accepts that either. You know, you said something else, and I want to touch on this because I think it's really, really important and very pertinent. And today, you know, a lot of what we see going on in the world today, especially younger generations, and I know some of the younger generations struggle, and I think especially younger men struggle sometimes with forming really strong, intimate friendships with other men and don't have a close group of friends. Now, I consider myself extremely blessed, right? I've got a group of guys, probably could count them on two hands, maybe a little more than that, that I know I could pick up the phone or go have a cup of coffee with them and tell them anything. And they could do the same. And no matter what it was, it would stay with them in confidence and they would be accepting and non-judgmental. And the reason that's so important is what I have found through my own life experience, and then I've read more and understood more about this as time has gone on. There's some truth into this old adage that, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. That's one way to work through problems and emotions in life is instead of stuffing it, is to have some close friends that, you know what, I can call up and say, you know, I got to go to this out-of-town board meeting, and it's effing BS, and it's a dog and pony show, and, you know, an hour later as I'm driving to the meeting, you know, my buddy's got me laughing, telling me, just put on your bozo suit with the big floppy shoes and put the red nose on and the wig and do your job.
Yeah.
Right? But the point of that is he just allowed me to kind of emotionally, verbally kind of vomit on him. And then he talked about his own experiences with similar things. And by the end of the conversation, we're both laughing. I've let this go because I was all stressed out and somewhat angry and blah, blah, blah. And just by having that conversation, my whole emotional makeup and attitude has changed.
Yeah, that's...
It works. Right?
It works.
But you've got to be able to develop those kind of friendships where you have that level of trust because, right, we're not going to reveal our innermost feelings to people that we don't trust.
That's right.
Not going to.
I have put so much value on that. I always have. I have a strong network of friends and acquaintances and family. And again, it goes back to the relationships I've built. But everybody I've come in contact with, I try to make a true connection and touch that person in a way that stays with them. That me, you know, and not on purpose. I when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you, and I want to give you my full attention, and I want to help you if you're having a problem. But you know, the older I get, and I'm not disparaging all the friends I've had over the years. You know, that circle through everyone gets families, and you lose touch with some. And,
sure.
You know, I'm at a point in my life where I would tell people, no matter what age you are, surround yourself with, don't worry about the amount, surround yourself with quality
Absolutely.
People. The people that are going to make you better, the people that are going to call you out when you're doing something wrong, that are going to make you laugh about your bozo suit.
Absolutely.
Those are the ones you want to garden those friendships and you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
and water and take care of those friendships because those are the ones that are the most meaningful.
Interesting that you say that because there was certainly a point in my life, and I'm going back probably 30 years at least now, where those people, the people that would tell me the truth and would call
you
me
get
out.
Defensive.
Oh, I would run from those people.
Same.
Right? Now, those are the friendships and the people I treasure the most.
That's right.
Right?
That's
because I know that they care about me enough that they're willing to risk the friendship by telling me the truth. That's...
You know it's real.
Real. It doesn't get any more real than that, right? They're willing to put that, kind of put their heart out there and take that risk, and that's... That's a good friend.
You're absolutely right. And you know, you can't afford to surround yourself with yes men or yes women. As nice as that feels,
right.
When you do become emotionally more intelligent, you start realizing, as we talked about, I actually need the opposite of that.
Right.
I need that. It's good to hear that. But I also need to hear, you're fucking up, man. Excuse my language, sorry. You know, you're messing up. You're messing up, and this is the problem, and... You know, I've done not only a good job of trying to keep those important people around me
mm-hmm.
and not worry about maybe the circle's getting smaller, but more importantly, I find that I use the word acquaintance more than I do friends. I used to say, oh, that's my friend, that's my friend, and then I started to realize, well, now I'm kind of devaluing my actual friends, and I think it's important. Not even for them, for you to kind of decipher to yourself who's an acquaintance and who's a friend, and not because you need to put them in a category and you're gonna write it down. It's important to know, like, listen, they're my acquaintance, and that's okay that they're my acquaintance. They're not the guy I'm gonna call when I need to vent about work.
Sure,
but I have value in them as an acquaintance, and maybe they'll become a friend.
Sure,
it's important to decipher to yourself who are the ones that you can call. You know, the best friends are the ones that you can. They can come over and you guys can both sit on the couch and watch TV and not have a conversation and then get up and they leave and you still feel like you had a meaningful hangout.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you don't, you can just be yourself. You don't have to entertain. You don't have to put any sort of face on. Those are the people.
Yeah. It's really important to understand and value, right, your friends. I want to retrench a little bit here for a second because you touched on, you know, how important it is to have those people that are not yes men or yes women, right? That will tell us the truth. And immediately I'm having a mini flashback thinking about work experiences where I've seen company leaders, and I'm talking CEOs, that were really good at some things, but literally had a direct staff that a couple different experiences in my work life that were afraid of them and wouldn't tell them the whole truth, right? They always had to manipulate or couch whatever the communication was a certain way. And therefore, this person was done a disservice because they never really saw the full unblemished picture, right? So what we're talking about is the kind of culture and creating a culture where you're going to be able to, as a leader, where you're willing to accept when people tell you things that are highly uncomfortable and not reacting, right? Listening to the whole thing and then, you know, allowing yourself to discern, okay, what's the full story, what's real, what's not? Because if you don't do that, if you're unwilling or and or unable to do that, how as a leader are you ever going to see the full picture?
I remember you just talked about this, I think, on your last episode, because I remember you talking about that with one of your guests, and that stuck with me because I had never thought of it that way, where it's actually, as you said, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not allowing people to come directly to you to tell you the problems that are going on for more than one reason. One being, well, you're never really going to know what's going on.
That's right.
So you can't fix what you don't know is broke,
that's right?
But the other part that I never thought of is, well, if someone's a people pleaser or everything's fine, everything's great, nothing is being accomplished because, first of all, again, you're not going to be able to know what's going on. But let me back up. You should also not be reactive and angry when people come to criticize you, as you're saying, because then it sets the precedent that I can't go to him,
right,
or her,
right,
and I can't tell them what's going on. I don't want to bother them.
Yeah,
and now that becomes a bigger problem because, again, you don't know that there's an issue because nobody's coming to you because they're right. afraid to come to you.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a balance between being approachable but also setting boundaries.
And it's kind of similar, right, when we're talking about personal friends where we're willing to accept and listen to difficult feedback, right, because if friends try that and we bite their hand off or their head off, so, you know, they're not going to try that too many more times.
That's what I was trying to say.
You know, it's very similar, right, in the work setting. And again, I don't think, obviously, people don't do that on purpose, because if they really understood what they were doing, they wouldn't do it. I think it's kind of the culture, and that, you know, that word gets so overused and misused, I think, in my humble opinion, or maybe not so humble opinion. Right, but culture is really, it's kind of how we feel about interacting with each other in a group, right? And is it a culture of trust? And am I allowed to fail? Right? Are we able to have difficult conversations without making it personal attacks? Right? Are we able to talk about what's really happening from a perspective that says this is not about blame; it's about how do we make things better?
Yeah,
you know. And every organization wants to think that that's true, right? But a lot of times they can't see the forest for the trees. And that's, you know, one of the values I bring as an outsider is it's kind of a mirror. And I get to kind of, you know, well, here's what it really looks like objectively.
Yeah.
You
know? And I got hung up on my words there. I apologize. But
no,
yeah,
no.
That's it's late in the day for me. But that's basically what I was saying was that, you know, I had learned from you from that last episode that, you know, all those times where I ran from people that criticized me, now I've opened the door that maybe they would have given me advice at a different point in my life, and they thought, I'm not going to tell him because he's just going to get mad. And I missed out on that those words of wisdom.
And maybe it's not always advice as much as I think sometimes perspective.
Right.
Right? Because if somebody can point out to me something, you know, when people have said things to me where my immediate emotional reaction was defensive/anger, it's usually almost 100% that they've touched
hit
the
a nerve.
Nerve.
Absolutely.
Right? Like
exactly what that is.
They hit the nail on the head. I had a woman who worked for me for a number of years, and she knew me well. I knew her husband and family, and she said to me one time, because she knew some of the women I had dated over the time I had known her, and she said, you know, you have the white knight syndrome.
Uh-oh.
And right away, I'm defensive. Well, what do you mean? well, you know, you tend to date these women that need be saved. And I like didn't speak to her for 2 or 3 days. Right. But as I look back, I'm like, well, damn it. If she isn't right.
Yeah. I had a, thankfully we're still very close friends. I had a high school friend as close as can be. And, I was dating a girl in my early 20s and he was like, dude, absolutely not. This is not. And he got in an argument with her because, you know, anyway, he was looking out for me. I didn't talk to him for almost 2 years because I was mad that he wasn't approving of the woman I was with. And he ended up being right.
Yeah.
And it's not about being right or wrong, but that's 2 years that, you know, we didn't hang out. It's unnecessary. You know, it was just a complete fracture that was unnecessary. If I had just.
Yeah.
It's not that he didn't like her. You know, it's that he wasn't telling me what I wanted to hear.
Sure.
And sure. Why was I mad? Because in the back of my head, I probably knew
Some part of you knew, right? He hit a nerve, right? He hit that raw nerve, but he took a chance, right? There's a real friend.
Yep.
Right? Because he took a chance. And it goes right to what we were talking about. You and I could probably sit here for the rest of the afternoon.
I could sit here for 3 hours with these guys, which we're going golfing soon.
Yes, we are. We're playing together in the Cicero Plank Road Chamber of Commerce. There's a little plug. Golf tournament, which I believe is August 18th, I think it is.
I have it in my phone.
Yeah, it's on my calendar, but my calendar.
I think that sounds right, actually.
Yeah.
18th. I think that's it.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
You know what? And I went through a very small window where you had asked me, and then I was wringing my hands for, you know, a half hour going, oh, what if I golf bad? And then he's not going to ask me to do. Doing all the opposite of everything you and I just talked about.
I understand.
But you know.
We're human.
But because I've worked on my emotional intelligence, I said, you know what? If I golf poorly, who cares? It's not about the golf. It's about the conversations we have in between holes.
That's right.
It's about the...
It's a social event.
It's a social event. And it
raises money for the chamber, and which is a great organization.
That's right.
And one that I care very deeply about and have gotten very involved with. So I appreciate you saying yes.
I appreciate you inviting me, and I'm always looking to help, you know, towards a great cause. But getting to hang out with you is a bonus. And
a few other business people, who one of whom you've met, Stephanie, who was a guest.
Yes.
She is one of the other people. You haven't met the other gentleman, but you'll have a chance to meet him. So it'll be...
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good time.
It'll be fun.
Well, I really am honored that you had me on here, man. I mean, just because I sit there and produce the show, doesn't mean like, oh yeah, I'll come on. And that's nothing, you know. I have a tremendous amount of respect for this show and what it is, and you're so good at what you do. You're such a natural on here, which, you know, I obviously expected you to be good at. Now make sure you say thank you. I expected you to be good at giving business advice. That's what you do, and you are very good at it. But I did not expect you to be so good at interviewing. And that's something I'm working on. In all my years of performing, I've never interviewed people. Mm. And when I was on the radio, it was just to play music and talk in between. So that's something I'm, believe it or not, after all these years of performing, I was looking at you going, wow, I love how sometimes he doesn't reply. He asks the question, they talk, and then he moves on to the next thing. And a lot of great interviewers out there do that. So you have a very natural ability.
Well, first off, thank you.
There it is.
Thank you very much. That was very, very kind of you to say.
I mean it.
I want to thank you for being on the show.
You're so welcome.
Great conversation, and you and I could sit here and talk forever.
Anytime, man.
And I want to thank you for being my producer for this show. I think you do. You and Danny, thank
Dan,
you.
Dan, man.
Dan is subbing behind the board here for you. Absolutely. As you're in front of the microphone today.
That's right.
You guys are the best. You make me look good. And as I tell people that talk to me about how great the podcast is, I say, well, these guys are great. If they can make me look good, they can make anybody look good. So I appreciate
you.
That.
And it's very easy, man. You make us look good as well. It's a perfect relationship. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks again.
Hey, thank you.
And that'll be a wrap for episode 7 of the Operations Excellence Podcast. Thanks very much.